You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Wednesday to you. It's time for Herd Mentality, and folks, we have a lot of great discussion points to get into. I think this is one of my favorite slates of questions that I've ever dug into on a Herd Mentality podcast. So let's do it. Buckle up. We'll start with Jason. He says, I understand the thought process of trading back to accumulate more picks and having more swings at the bat to potentially get a hit. But what are your thoughts on using our current draft capital to move upwards, targeting fewer but better players that actually have a chance to make the roster? I don't see 5th, 6th, or 7th rounders having a chance to have an impact on a roster that's going to be so hard to make, and we are in a win-now window. I think it's a good question, and I'm going to spoil one of my talking points for a podcast that we're going to do later this week where we really start talking about the draft and options. I am not married to anything. I'm not team trade back. I'm not team trade up. I'm not team get a corner. I'm not team get a running back. I am team get good players. That's where I'm at with it. Brandon Bean has done a great job of building this roster to a point where you look at it and don't say, man, there's huge holes in these areas. So with that in mind, I am not married to any scenarios. I can be convinced that trading up is a great idea. Trading back is a great idea. Specifically targeting a position is a great idea. I'm open for all of it. I just want to get some good football players. And if that means you trade up to get them, great. If that means you move back to get them, great. Just get a bunch of good football players. I do think there's something to be said about the rosterability of 6-7 rookies, and that should play into the mix. And if you could part with, you know, those later picks, 5th, 6th, 7th round, to move up in the 3rd or move up in the 2nd or even, you know, packaging a couple of those picks to move into the 4th round, I think there's a good case to be made to do that. Now, with that said, the needs that you perceive the team to have right now could look a lot different in 4 months after there's rookie minicamp, OTAs, training camp, preseason, somebody gets injured. Needs are ever evolving. So just as quickly as you think you've solved all your needs and don't have anything glaring, things can change. And that's why I think, you know, there's just so many different arguments to be made. But at the end of the day, just get good football players. Baker Bills says, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah says he's spoken to the Bills. Considering how we extended Milano, could the Bills potentially be targeting Jeremiah in the 1st round via a trade up? I feel like with Edmonds contract talks coming up, this could be a possibility. Saw that he had glowing things to say about the organization and is a fit with the team. So just for anybody who's not familiar, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, he's a linebacker from Notre Dame. Smaller player, you know, probably not even 220 pounds. He's more of a weak side pursuit style player, a guy that I think almost has some linebacker safety hybrid tendencies about him. Now, not even considering Tremaine Edmonds' contract status, which, you know, I don't think Milano or Owusu-Koramoah is a fit to replace Edmonds. So I think our conversation about Owusu-Koramoah really is independent of anything that has to do with Tremaine Edmonds, because neither one of those players fills the role that would be left behind if something didn't work out long-term with Tremaine Edmonds. But let's go back to Carolina. Sean McDermott had Luke Kuechly. He had Thomas Davis. They still drafted Shaq Thompson in the 1st round. And they did that while Kuechly and Davis were in their prime. So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility for the Bills to go out and draft Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, even if Tremaine Edmonds is extended, and with Matt Milano under contract for the next 4 seasons. They could look at Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah as a Buffalo nickel, as a guy that can be a slot safety. There's a lot of versatility that comes with Owusu-Koramoah because he's so athletic, he's so good in coverage, he's so good in space. I think there's a role for him on every single defense in the NFL. Even if you're a base nickel defense that has two linebackers like Edmonds and Milano. So I think he's absolutely still on the table for the Bills, and I think he would be great value at pick 30. And you know what? Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, he checks the most important box that I'm looking for when it comes to who the Bills are picking at 30, and that's a good football player. He's a good football player, and I'm not going to get all hung up in positions. Look, we'll talk about this more the rest of the week. I'm not – whatever positions you want to throw out there, just get good players. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is a good football player. Kevin says, I heard you on the Draft Dudes mock draft on Tuesday and was wondering why Zaven Collins wasn't the pick for the Bills at 30. It looks like he could fill a coverage linebacker pass rusher role for us. Is Hamza Nasr-Ladin a fit for the big nickel role that the Bills have been lacking? Also, is 30 too high to take him? So let's start with Zaven Collins, then we'll talk Hamza Nasr-Ladin. Zaven Collins, linebacker from Tulsa, very much a player that I think could recreate the Lorenzo Alexander role for the defense. He's 260 pounds. He's really good in terms of rushing the passer. He's very good with shallow zone drops and reading the backfield and getting into throwing windows and being disruptive in coverage, a ton of ball production. I really like what he can bring to any defense in the NFL. I think the Belichick disciples, the Brian Flores, the Patrick Grahams, the Mike Vrabel, those types of guys are going to like this type of player. But, you know, if you're a 4-3 team like the Bills and you have found a role for a player like Lorenzo Alexander in the past, I think you can get some really nice production out of a Zaven Collins. So Collins fits the description of good football player that I can envision a role for on the team. And I wouldn't be mad if he was the pick. So why didn't I pick him? Well, that's because there was a caveat for the draft that we did. We were doing sponsored content from Panini, which is a trading card company, and we had a pack of Panini cards, and the objective was we're going to pull a card out of the pack and do a mock draft that specifically helps that player. And that player was Josh Allen. And so with us kind of being focused on picking only offensive players that would help Josh Allen, I wasn't thinking about Zaven Collins or any defensive players at all. So that's important to remember with that experiment. And while I am very much open to a lot of possibilities, I don't think personally Zaven Collins is going to be super high in the pecking order for me with what I would do with pick 30. There would have to be a lot of different targets that I like better that wouldn't be available before I lasered in on Zaven Collins. And so I know that might be a little bit confusing because I said Zaven Collins is a good football player that I can see a role for, and so that's my objective with pick 30. But within that, there are preferences that I have, and so Collins wouldn't be super high on that list. But at the end of the day, if he was the pick, there's nothing to be mad about because good football player that has a clear path to a role on the team. Vin says, you did a great job explaining the meaning of 10, 11, and 12 personnel. Was wondering if you could explain blocking schemes. I think I understand what wide zone means. Are there others that we should know about? So let's talk blocking schemes as it pertains to run offense. You have two different types of blocking schemes. One is a zone blocking scheme. One is a gap blocking scheme. And so a gap blocking scheme, it features designed runs that are reliant on the offensive lineman moving bodies out of gaps to create space. So from the running back's perspective, there is a track that has been identified for them. There's a place where the football is supposed to go, and the offensive linemen create that gap for the running back to run through. This puts an emphasis on having big, powerful, drive-blocking, mauling offensive linemen, guys that can root defensive linemen out of their gaps. And from the running back perspective, because the tracks are designed and determined for them, it puts less of an emphasis on their vision. Think about a guy like Leonard Fournette. Everybody loved Leonard Fournette's size, his power, his physicality, but there was a lot of questions about his vision coming out of LSU. That's why he was a good fit for a gap blocking scheme where those tracks are determined for him and he doesn't have to pick his spots quite as much. So you need offensive linemen that are big, powerful, physical guys that can move bodies out of the way, and you want running backs that stay the course, are disciplined, that take those tracks and can kind of put their head down and grind out yardage. When it comes to zone blocking schemes, it's much different. For the offensive line, it's not about creating a gap to a design place. This is now based around the idea that the lineman will be responsible for the gap to the side the play is going. So they're not blocking a man, they're blocking an area. So they're going to run their path and they're going to deal with any defenders that show up in their area. And so their responsibility within that is to stay attached to the defender that's in their zone. They don't have to be dominant. They don't have to move bodies out of the way. They just need to ensure that they cover the defender up and create the opportunity for the running back to make a clean read. I was at the Shrine Bowl several years ago in Tampa Bay, and I was on the field, and I was with the offensive lineman, and I was listening to the Minnesota Vikings offensive line coach at the time coach these offensive linemen on block, on zone blocking. And obviously Minnesota very much a zone rushing team. And he was continuously saying to these offensive linemen, that's all you need. That's all you need. You just need to take them where they're going just a little bit more than they want to get there, right? It's not like you have to just blow guys off the ball and create a gap. You need to be in the way and you need to seal those lanes so that the running back can work off of your leverage. I hope that makes a lot of sense. Now, when you have a zone blocking scheme, there are different dynamics that are required in terms of skill set from your offensive lineman and your running back. From the offensive line perspective, you want guys that have efficient lateral mobility, guys that can move laterally and work horizontally and really just go with the flow of the play. They have to have some range about them. They have to have nimble feet and that ability to get their body in proper position to create leverage and create lanes so that the running back can work off of them. From the running back's perspective, it puts a lot more stress on their vision and their ability to anticipate lanes, right? They have to anticipate those creases because there's no actual designed gap that the run is supposed to go to. They have to see and anticipate and go with the blocking and make that cut and get upfield. And if not, they have to, you know, cut back or string it out. There's a lot of different things that they have to do. So there's a lot more stress on their vision and decision making when it comes to zone running. Now, one other thing that's important with the zone rushing attack that is different than the gap when it pertains to the running backs is now this running back, there's some nuance and technique about them and how they press the line of scrimmage to manipulate the second level. They want to kind of press deep and then move those linebackers, try to get them to commit going hard one way and then put their foot in the dirt and get downhill. So for the running back in a zone blocking scheme, there's a lot more put on them in terms of their technique and how they press the line of scrimmage to create space on the second level, to move linebackers, to force them to commit, and then to make those blockers right by reading that leverage and cutting off them appropriately. So very different. And, you know, that's why you see teams like the Miami Dolphins, the Baltimore Ravens, those are gap blocking schemes, downhill, power run, Patriots, a lot of that as well. And then you have zone rushing teams like the 49ers and the Vikings, where the makeup of their offensive linemen and the makeup of the running backs that they use behind those offensive lines are very, very different. So hopefully that all makes sense and that you guys have a good perspective and understanding on the differences between gap and zone blocking. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on every single bar. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness, and they're having a tournament with all the flavors to figure out which one is the best. And we're getting down to the final four. The winner of this matchup today is going to the championship. And so that matchup is mint brownie versus coconut brownie chunk. And my vote is coconut brownie chunk. I'm not a big fan of like chocolate mint combos. So I'm going with the coconut brownie chunk. If you want to vote, go to BuiltBar.com or find them on Twitter to vote for your choice. And remember, use our promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order over at BuiltBar.com. Next one comes from Justin, who says, with Mario Addison being 34, Jerry Hughes 33, and Cole Beasley 32 at the start of the season, do you think we use this draft to bring in their eventual replacements and let them have a year on the job before becoming starters? Yes, I think that's a very smart idea. And they started to do that with A.J. Epenesa at defensive end, where you looked at last year going into the season, your top three ends were Addison, Hughes, and Trent Murphy, all of them, you know, on the wrong side of 30. And so they got younger with A.J. Epenesa. I think they'll continue to try and do that. And then when it comes to Cole Beasley, 32 years old, he's under contract through the 2022 season. But you saw the value of the slot player for Josh Allen and how important that was for the growth that he showed in 2020 along with Stephon Diggs. And you saw the Bills go out and bring in Emmanuel Sanders and obviously the development of Gabriel Davis. So I think the Bills are going to be very committed to making sure that Josh Allen has four top receivers that he trusts all the time that run great routes, get open, catch the football, and have some athleticism about them, guys that can separate. I think that's going to be a high priority for the Bills, you know, for a long, long time here, just kind of based on replicating and keeping those ingredients from 2020 that made Josh Allen an MVP candidate. And so, yeah, I do think that wide receiver in the first three rounds, a guy that has a Cole Beasley-like skill set, is very much on the table. Let me tell you a name that I think the Bills are going to like a lot, and that is Elijah Moore from Ole Miss. I think that he is, I think he's Emmanuel Sanders 2.0. My brother, who we talk football all the time, and you guys would be surprised how much of my takes and how many of my opinions are developed from my conversations with my brother, who, you know, he played college football and knows the game really, really well. He thinks that Elijah Moore is Cole Beasley on steroids, to which I would say that's Emmanuel Sanders. So check out Elijah Moore. I think the Bills are going to like him a lot, and I would not dismiss him at pick 30 in the 2021 NFL draft. Justin had another question here, and it's a good one. He said, if Caleb Farley, the Virginia Tech cornerback, was on the board at 30, would you take him? And also with the underwhelming options at kick returner and punt returner, would you use a day three pick on a return specialist? I remember Joe Reed from Virginia being a hot name amongst Bills Mafia as a potential day three returner last year. Yes, so we are going to have a conversation about Caleb Farley later this week, and the evaluation with him is really reliant on the medicals. He's got a torn ACL in his past, and then he's got two back surgeries since 2019. And so I'm going to have Kyle Trimble on the podcast in the next couple days here to talk about Caleb Farley as a potential faller in the draft and if he's worth the pick at 30 from a medical perspective. So I'll talk to you about the player, but Kyle's going to come in and deliver that medical information that we need to kind of piece this together and talk about him being an option at pick 30. Because look, going into the process, I thought he was a top 10 pick. He's my number one corner in the draft. I love him. So I don't want to spoil everything I have to say later in the week. But yeah, we need to have a real conversation about Caleb Farley. And as for a potential returner on day three, yeah, I want that. I want that badly. So I'm in on that idea. Next one comes from Peter, who says, I enjoyed the pod greatly with Marcel Louis-Jacques and greatly appreciated his insight However, when it comes to potentially picking Travis Etienne in the first round, my wounds are still raw from another running back who had speed and explosiveness from Clemson, our 2010 pick of C.J. Spiller. Other issues aside, can you break down from a running back standpoint why picking Etienne would be different and better than the Spiller pick? Perhaps this question might be unfair to Spiller because he did have some good seasons in Buffalo, both rushing and receiving, and perhaps my wounds are more from the issues I'm asking you to set aside, such as how high he was picked and how bad the overall state of the Bills were at the time. Interested in your thoughts and honesty if I'm wrong for thinking this way. Peter, I love the question, and I think you probably have a similar question and perspective of a lot of Bills fans. And so let's talk about this because it's an important conversation for us to have, especially on the heels of that podcast that we put out last week with Marcel Louis-Jacques. If you missed it, go back and listen. Last week on Friday, it was absolutely tremendous. So before we really break down the differences between Spiller and Etienne, we have to, I think it's really important, really, really, really important to be mindful of the situations that Etienne would be brought into and what Spiller was brought into. You guys remember back when they picked Spiller? It was this offense that had a good running attack, right? I mean, Fred Jackson, Marshawn Lynch were in place already. And this receiving core that just didn't have big play potential. There was no dynamic big play guys, guys that can get down the field and win vertically. So the Bills thought if they can get C.J. Spiller in the mix that it would allow them to create more big plays to stress defenses horizontally more and open up more opportunities in the passing game. That's a hell of a lot to ask C.J. Spiller to come in and do. To me, you need the opposite. To me, you need to have guys that can stretch the field vertically and get open and stress defenses that way, and then you unleash a player like Spiller behind that. So I think it was a gross misunderstanding of how to create more big plays for your offense. And just a lot to ask out of Spiller. When it comes to Etienne, he would be coming into a situation where the Bills have everything in place. Everything. Quarterback that's impossible to defend. Great route runners that can win at all levels of the field at receiver. Athletic tight ends in Dawson Knox and Jacob Hollister. They have a downhill back in Zach Moss. They're missing a guy like Etienne, a guy that can win as a receiver out of the backfield and win as a perimeter and outside run threat. So when considering the environment they would be introduced to and the dynamic they would be expected to bring to the offense, we're talking night and day. So let's talk more about specifically Etienne, Spiller as players. First of all, we have got to get helmet scouting out of our system. There's nothing about Aaron Maben as the defensive end from Penn State that has anything to do with any other defensive end from Penn State. And I deal with this across every fan base. Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans, they want nothing to do with Clemson defensive ends. You talk to Green Bay Packers fans, and they want nothing to do with a Florida State edge rusher. Every fan base has their PTSD, if you will, when it comes to a failed high pick at a school from a particular position that, for whatever reason, they don't want to see a player at that school from that position ever brought to their team again. It's just not smart. It's just not smart. Like, tell me about all the good quarterbacks from Tennessee, except for Peyton Manning. Were you going to take Peyton Manning off your draft board because Tennessee's never had a good quarterback in the NFL? You can't do that stuff. Those are all unique individual human beings that have nothing to do with one another. And a lot of times, we're not even talking about the same coaching staff or scheme. So there's nothing about the helmet that these guys wear and the position that they play that should make anybody compare two completely different human beings to each other and assume anything about the other player based on what the other player did in the NFL or didn't do in the NFL. So from a body type, Travis Etienne, 5'10", 215. CJ Spiller, 5'11", 196. That's significant. Spiller is an inch taller and 20 pounds lighter. That matters a lot. CJ Spiller, I mean, that's not necessarily the type of frame that you're looking for to be a lead back in the NFL or a top 10 pick. You want a guy that has some density about him. Guy that has enough bulk on him to really be able to carry the workload. So from a body type perspective, Etienne has a major trump card, being an inch shorter and 20 pounds heavier. Contact balance significantly favors Travis Etienne. The ability to absorb hits, continue upfield, break tackles, significantly in favor of Etienne. Decision making, I have concerns about both players, but for different reasons. I think that Etienne is a bit too choosy. I think he sees the field fine, but there are times where he is a little bit too selective with the holes that he picks. And there are other times where I think he's too eager with the football, where he doesn't show enough patience. So I want to see him kind of develop a little bit more technique and nuance, pressing the line of scrimmage. And then when he does find the gap that he wants to commit to, I want him to be decisive and go. For CJ Spiller, outside of 2012, that dude was allergic to contact. He would take the path of least resistance all the time. He was never the type of running back that could look at the line of scrimmage, see 3 yards, put his head down, and get 3 yards. He instead would dance, get lateral, try to break it to the sideline, and lose 2 yards. Again, outside of 2012. 2012, different player. Every other exposure that I've ever had to CJ Spiller in the NFL, the guy was allergic to contact. So I have decision-making concerns with both, but they're for different reasons. And I am more inclined to buy into Travis Etienne and how he sees the field and how he responds to the defense way more than CJ Spiller. Obviously, they're both super explosive runners. They're both good pass catchers. They're both below average when it comes to pass blocking. But I think the body composition, the contact balance, and the decision making are both strongly in favor of Etienne. And that, in addition to the stuff we talked about with helmet scouting, should make you feel a lot better about Etienne should he be the Bills pick at 30. Mark says, I was iffy on the idea of Etienne in the first round, but Marcel has me all in. I know that you are still on the fence. Hypothetically, if I said we take Etienne at 30 and then guarantee we are able to get Melifonwu at 61, do you do it? Yeah, I probably would. I probably would, because those are two good football players that I think could fill major roles. I mean, you could be looking at your lead running back in 2021, a guy that adds a speed dynamic to the offense from the backfield that didn't exist, and you get an upgrade at CB2. And so, yeah, sign me up. I think that's a wonderful way to get immediate impact from your first two picks in ways that I don't think a lot of us envision. So, yeah, I mean, if you get an edge defender at 30, we're talking about a 25% of the snap type player. You get Melifonwu at 61 and Etienne at 30, those guys are going to help your football team right away and should for a long time. Mark had a second question. He said, what are your thoughts on Stanford cornerback Paulson Adebo? Seemed like there was first round buzz on him if he entered the draft last year. Now seems like he could go third round or later. I know he sat out a year, but is there the potential for him to be a high-value pick in the third round? Absolutely. I like Paulson Adebo a good bit. I'd be comfortable with him at 61. I'd love him in the third round. he's a player that was awesome in 2018. And then his 2019 season started off really, really shaky. And one of his games that was completely embarrassing was against UCF, where Gabriel Davis torched him over and over and over again on double moves. And I think a lot of people put a lot of stock into that game and didn't watch the rest of the 2019 season. And I think he turned it around and played really good ball. I think he's got size, athleticism, length, ball skills. He's physical. He tackles. He just has to be a little bit more consistent with his eye discipline. And I think a coach like Sean McDermott and the staff that he has in place to develop defensive backs, I think that's something that he can fix. Because the problem with Paulson Adebo, and he's got great ball skills, he just wants to see the quarterback throw the football. And if you do that in the NFL, you're going to see them throw the football and complete it over your head. So if he cleans up that eye discipline, I think he's going to be a really good starter in the NFL. And I'd love him, honestly, at 61, and I'd be good with him for sure in the third round. Tom says, do you think the Bills have their guy already picked out? I remember watching when Josh was drafted. I told my buddy that the Bills had picked out their guy, and they went and got him. I think they did the same with Dawkins and Knox. I wonder if they have already made that decision and will play the draft in whatever fashion it takes to get him, whether going up or down. I would think if he lands on number 30, they don't take any chances. If they pick the guy, who do you think it is? I think it's impossible to know. I think the Bills certainly will go into the draft with a plan, and it could be, look, I mean, I don't want to be lame here, but it literally could be trade up, trade back, pick a player at 30. I have a hard time thinking that they are going into this with their guy in mind. They have to get guy in the first round and whatever it takes to get him. I don't think that's a strategy that you can employ when your first pick is at 30. So I can see where you're coming from with this. I just think the Bills are probably going into this thing with a lot more of an open mind than, hey, this is the guy we have to get when it comes to, you know, pick 30, whether that's a move up or they think they can move back or they just want to pick them at 30. I think that they have they're going to cast a wider net when it comes to the range of possibilities with that pick. Potts says, hey, Joe, hope all is well. I was wondering if Asante Samuel Jr. is a cornerback that the Bills can be looking at for their first pick. I'm almost positive they are going to go BPA at edge or cornerback. Is Samuel a scheme fit to fill our CB2 spot? So Samuel Jr., cornerback from Florida State, good player, 5'10", 180 pounds. He's pretty small. I really like him best in man coverage because I think he's super sticky and he's got good speed. He can turn and run, loose hips, quick feet. So for a zone-heavy defense, I think he can play in zone just fine. I'm not sure that he's the best fit. When I think about Asante Samuel Jr., I think he's discount Denzel Ward. You guys remember him, Ohio State cornerback, was like a top five pick by the Browns a few years back. He's been a good player for them. I think he's the discount version of that. So I think you can play him in zone, but what I would like if they wound up picking Samuel Jr. at 30, I would like that it would give the Bills an option that they could play more man coverage with. And they have a guy that can turn and run with speedy receivers better than a Levi Wallace could. So I like Samuel Jr. I think that he's a player that I can buy into at 30. I don't know that he would be high on my order of players that I would target and pick at 30, but there'd be nothing to be mad about if he was the selection. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL seasons are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV, and they have real-time updated props and odds on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the new scores and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Next one today comes from BC72, who says, do you think the Bills are done in free agency till after the draft for the comp pick formula and signing prices. There's still some good veteran pass rushers and cornerbacks out there. I honestly don't think the Bills are done adding to the roster in free agency when it comes to pre-draft signings. I think Brandon Bean is continuing to monitor the market. He probably has offers out there for guys who are hoping for better offers from other teams, and eventually they're going to have to kind of laser in and pick a team, and they're probably best served to do that before the draft to give themselves their best chance of making rosters. So I think that Brandon Bean's going to continue to play the value and bargain bin game here as we approach the draft. Adam says, is there any fit or value at 30 or in a trade down for any of the Penn State guys? And Adam lists Pat Freiermuth, the tight end, and edge rusher Jason Oweh. So at 30, I wouldn't love either one of those two players. I think they're both projects. And Freiermuth more so just because he's a tight end, and tight ends always take time to develop at the NFL level, but I do like him as a starter. I think he's the second best tight end in the draft. He's coming off of an injury, so that's something to keep in mind. But, you know, I don't know that his impact right away is going to be good enough for me to get behind him at pick 30. Jason Oweh is obviously insanely physically gifted. I mean, rare athleticism, but I think he's got so much work to do in terms of learning how to use those athletic gifts to rush the passer and make plays. I mean, he had no sacks this past year, so he's very raw. Toolsy guys, but players that I think if you pick, you have to be willing to play the long game with them, and for that, I don't know that I'd want them as a high priority at pick 30. Kincaid says, is drafting a cornerback and Buffalo nickel in the first two rounds overkill? I am on the side that it isn't. No, I'm good with that. I think that you can get good value at corner, maybe Eric Stokes in the first round, and then you turn around and you can pick someone that you think can fill that Buffalo nickel role. So I'm not against it. I think those are picks that I can envision coming in and claiming early roles and making an impact and, you know, making a difference when it comes to scheme options in the secondary. So no, I'm not of the opinion that it's overkill. And I think it would be a good plan, one of many good plans that I can get behind. Next one comes from Kevin, who says, I'd like to hear your thoughts on options for the Bills at one technique. Star Latulele is back and a worthy starter, but he's on the downside of his career, and I see this as a spot with opportunity for improvement, at least at the reserve level for now. Who are the options in free agency and the draft that you think could come in rotationally and take over when Star's contract is done? Kevin, I think you have a good question here because, yes, Star Latulele is back. He's not really a long-term play in my mind, and the depth behind him is concerning. Vernon Butler, not my favorite guy for playing one technique. And then Harrison Phillips, you know, he's still been up and down. He still hasn't found consistency since coming back from his second ACL tear. And I know he played better in the playoffs, but, I mean, he's a player at minimum that needs competition. So I have some options in both the draft and free agency that I like. From a free agency perspective, two guys stand out to me. Daquan Jones, he's been with the Tennessee Titans, and Steve McClendon, former New York Jet, got traded to the Buccaneers, won the Super Bowl. I think he's a high-quality A-gap defender. In the draft, I've got four guys that I really like. Tyler Shelvin from LSU, Aleem McNeil from NC State, Tommy Togiai from Ohio State, and Marlon Tuipulotu. Those are all guys that I would love in the third, fourth round. I know the Bills would have to trade up into the fourth round, but any one of those guys could come away and I think be a developmental starter and add value to the rotation right away and give some much-needed competition to Harrison Phillips and Vernon Butler. Matt says, do you think there will be more steals and guys rising and falling in this year's draft? I think you're going to have two different strategies across the NFL. Teams that are going to want to punt on picks this year for next year, where they have the information that they normally do to make picks and evaluate talent and really have all of the data points that they prefer. And so they're going to punt picks this year for picks next year. And then you're going to have the opposite, where there's going to be teams that feel like they can be aggressive this year, take some swings, and come away with several steals and players that they think are good value. So I think when you have both of those extremes in play, I think you're going to see a lot of movement and a lot of perceived steals, risers, fallers, that type of stuff. Last one today comes from Dave, who says, please note how many questions / comments you got for herd mentality on Friday of last week as the trades dropped and compare it to an average day. And one of these days, I'd love to hear your take on the 2022 quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell, and JT Daniels at the top of the board, I'm guessing. So as it relates to herd mentality questions, I think I got less herd mentality questions, but a lot more engagement from, you know, people that might keep track of my work from a draft perspective. So I have like two hats that I wear. One is Joe, the draft guy, which is really the primary hat that I wear. That's where, you know, I focus most of my time with the work that I do is on the draft and scouting players, being aware of team needs and, you know, how players fit into certain situations, that type of stuff. And then that second hat that I wear is that Bills hat. And to be honest with you, most of the feedback and questions and comments that I got last Friday was other teams, 49ers fans, Dolphins fans, Eagles fans, Panthers fans. Those were the people that I heard from mostly at the end of last week. Dave's second question was regarding the 2022 quarterback class. He mentioned Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma, Sam Howell from North Carolina, and then JT Daniels from Georgia. And I would also throw Kadon Slovis from USC into this conversation at this point. Now, I'll be honest with you, I haven't done a ton of work on these players. You know, I only have so much bandwidth in my head, and I have to focus in on guys that are eligible right now. So I haven't paid too much attention to these guys with that sharp lens on of a scouting evaluation perspective. I've watched them all play. I have, you know, very, I guess, high-level, low-substance thoughts on them in that I don't love any of them at this point. I think Rattler's got really good arm talent. Sam Howell is fun, like a Will Greer type fun, where you see some really fun throws down the field, but you know, you see a lot of throws that make you want to pull your hair out. So I'm definitely not in on him quite yet. And then Daniels and Slovis are the two guys that I'm probably the least familiar with at this point. So I certainly don't go into next year at this point and think to myself, oh man, you got to see the 2022 quarterbacks. We've said that in other years, like going into this year, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, there's a lot of buzz for those guys. You know, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, a lot of buzz for those guys that year, even Josh Rosen that year. You know, I don't know that I'm going into this year saying, oh man, if you miss out on Fields or Lawrence or Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, man, you're going to get this guy next year. I don't feel that way. Now, here's the other part of this. These players are going to develop, right, for better or worse. They're going to become different players, either better or the same. And you're going to have players that we don't even know about right now. Guys like Zach Wilson, guys like Mac Jones, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, whoever 2022's version of those players are, we don't know who they are yet, but they will, you know, come out. They'll wind up being superstars and guys that we weren't talking about that eventually turn into, you know, top of the first round quarterback. So we have a long way to go when it comes to the 2022 quarterback class. But as I see it today, I don't think I'm in love with any of these players, but a lot will change between now and then. Speaking of the draft, we are going to really accelerate our draft conversations starting tomorrow. We'll talk players that fit, options, strategies, all that type of stuff as we ramp up our coverage and attention to the 2021 NFL draft as it relates to the Buffalo Bills. So don't miss it. Make sure you're subscribed, rate, review, and share the podcast. And I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.